Well, I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away. I'm just saying. Back to Rick Wiles.
So this Russian spy, who was also a double agent for MI6?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. So he worked for MI6, London's Great Britain spy agency, where Christopher Steele worked. Mm-hmm. So this double agent gets poisoned last week. Immediately, the news media in London and New York and Washington blames Vladimir Putin for poisoning him.
Right.
That Putin got another guy, poisoned another person in London.
It's not just a matter of blaming him. There's actual evidence of other assassinations that were specifically approved by cuddly Vlad Pooty Poot, the guy that the president of the United States probably refers to as Daddy Vladdy. Who is daddy to you? Who is your daddy, Donnie? Huh? Who is daddy? And this guy considers himself a Christian and a better Christian than most Christians. But he can't quite bring himself to condemn a man who, at the very least, if not actively promoting, looks the other way, turns a blind eye.
I need a staff. I need a staff. Howdy. You didn't hear the well howdy part or the most of the intro or anything, because I've buttons. 2.5 minutes past the hour, this program is live. It is the 15th day of March, 2018, and beware the Ides of March apparently has relevance even 2,062 years after the first time it had relevance. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I just got wrapped up in a bunch of not that I'm complaining, except that I'm complaining. I'm all prepped up for one hell of a thorn in the side Thursday. But toward the end, a little bit before airtime, I got two or three emails in saying, Bob, you know, what the hell's up with headonradionetwork.com? And I've been trying to find out. And I finally did. So just so everybody can know, we're paid up, bills paid and everything, but the account has been suspended because we've been hacked. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com has been hacked. And apparently it has been used for phishing activities. So that's why it is in a state of suspense. Give me a sec. So, at least one hopes headon.live is working. I can only imagine what this is going to be. Yeah, okay, you're a smartass, Steve. And that means all members of the fraternity of Steve are smartasses. I said I need a staff, and Steve sent me a picture of a wooden stick. Yeah. Lovely. But no, seriously, that's... And so I've been trying to get hold of John Fox about this. I haven't been able to. But headon.live works. Okay. And the stream... And the White Rose Society stream and the headon.live stream work. The only thing down right now is headonradionetwork.com. But pretty much anything you need there, you can get at headon.live. Most particularly the PayPal access and the chat room access and the stream itself. Okay? Wow, that's just so freaking weird. No, really, see, highfalutin, big old, great, big professional radio operations that are supported by nutritional supplement sales. Well, they've got somebody who goes, ah, no problem, I'll take care of that. And you say, yeah, but the account's suspended. Nah, it ain't a big deal. I'll have it taken care of in 10 minutes. Okay, well, good. And then, so here we go. And Java is apparently continuing, the chat room's continuing to run. You can jump into the chat room by picking out a screen name and a password over at headon.live. And jumping in, you'll be greeted by Anatole, Steve from Georgia, Stan, VT Blom, and of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, even though he is a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space today. And he's just in the room as his usual spacing guild master self, Sparky. And thanks, Sparky, for keeping the chat room up for another month. that's a thought. Clarity says, yeah, they're probably fishing for those cryptocurrencies. Could be. Eventually, the Bitcoin assholes will probably take down the entire web, or maybe make the whole planet go dark. It's a very energy-intensive process. But anyway, it's the Ides of March. It's Thursday, the 15th day of March, 2018. And the program's live, and I'm here, and now I'm everything's cool, so I don't have to drive anywhere or go anywhere, so there won't be a shortened program. We got 3 whole hours of radio, and we got one little problem. Okay, beyond the whole suspended account thing, we got one little problem. The fundraising deficit has reached $544. And even though I'm proud to tell you that the hardworking peripatetic periodontic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter have today introduced March Madness Mayapple, which is in fact a proprietary blend of GMO-free, gluten-free, cruelty-free, free-range, no soy, no gluten, like I said. Well, hell, there's no nothing. It's a bullshit nutritional supplement. Even though that's been introduced today for a 3-month supply for only $544 plus $200 shipping and handling, I'm guessing nobody's going to order it. So, because, you know, it's a bullshit nutritional supplement. So, when we get in holes like this, it has a real impact. And it affects things like bill paying, which is almost a constant around here. So at $544, that creeps the hell out of me. Yes, 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 I know. Ron and Raleigh says, now, Bob, if you only had a rod, thy rod and thy staff, yeah. So, look. The PayPal interface works really good over at headon.live, headon.live. And you just scroll down, there's a PayPal button, you press it, and away you go. And hopefully we will take down that $544 so that I'm not just sitting here with my little head in my hands at $744 tomorrow. Because this is, you know, this is radio on a shoestring. That's how we exist in a world without Soros money. One can only imagine what that would be like. But you know, that's a, yeah. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, and all Steves get to take credit for this. Look on the bright side, says Steve. If Vladdy Daddy hacked you, that means the horn is getting under his skin. I don't want to get under his skin. He's liable to send somebody with an umbrella and a polonium pellet and get under mine. And I hear that's, you know, even for people with health insurance, that's not good. So anyway, that's where we stand. We got $544 to raise. And gosh, I hope we do. I just hope we do. Because we're at the middle of the month and we've got one more week of fundraising. And then we've got what I hope will be a week of fundraising free radio. So, yeah. That, you know, If you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, and I understand why some people do, well, and there it is. Okay. No problem bringing headon.live up. Works just dandy. The mailing address for checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801, and that address is also present over at headon.live. You can always find it there. The only downside to that is that from wherever it's coming, it'll take 3 or 4 days to get here, and then it's another couple of days down to the bank and the credit union, whatever. But thank you. Thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs has a $25 challenge on the table to get us started this evening. Thank you so much, Ralphs. Hopefully that'll get knocked out, and maybe somebody will carry that on and put it forward. Okay, delay that. There is now a $125 challenge on the table, courtesy of Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you both very kindly. So that would just about knock half of the deficit out. So that's huge, 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 huge. It's 12 minutes past the hour, and like I said before, I found out the weird technical stuff. I was pretty much all set for a rollicking thorn in the side Thursday, and I still am. And look, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. A lot of stuff. Indictments. I've got this mental image. I shared it with Clarity earlier. It was somebody looking at the president in the Oval Office and saying, "No, no, Mr. President, come over here and tell me about your good friend Vlad Putin over here by the coffee pot. No, no, and over here by Andrew Jackson. Speak right into Andy's left nostril, would you, Mr. President?" So, no, there's a lot of new, lots of stuff. But I'm going to, and yes, the bridge story in Florida, a week or so ago, both Florida, whichever university it is, Florida Atlantic, was it Florida Atlantic? Both the contractor building the bridge and the university published our friend V.T. Blom describes as self-congratulatory messages on Facebook and Twitter earlier this week, and now suddenly they're down the memory hole. But I'm a longtime reader of folks like Dave Barry and Carl Hyas, and while they have made making comedy out of the intense corruption in things like government and contracting and things like that in South Florida, there's a lot of truth in it too. And so when this story plays out, it will probably play out with a background of back scratching and money changing hands, and maybe a few people will wind up in prison for the between 6 and 10 people who are said to already be dead out of that horrible collapse. On the other hand, I'm not a big believer in if it bleeds, it leads, so that's about enough of that. No, you know who I hate, right? You know who I despise. You know who I loathe. Nazis. Nazis. I just hate Nazis. And I think that's okay. I'll even go so far as to say I'm intolerant of Nazis. And so when I see a story like this, oh my God, how does it not become, I mean, how do you not? It's the story of a young Nazi who a couple of years ago was one of your more up-and-coming young Nazis in the United States. He and his father-in-law had put together something called the Traditionalist Worker Party. And they, you know, they're Nazis. And they seem to be growing rather quickly. And they were, among other things, present at the Unite the Right rally. They were vocal in their support of, you know, Nazism. And now it all seems to, it all appears to be in ashes. And I'm struggling not to giggle here. We're talking about a creep by the name of Matthew Heimbach. Matthew Heimbach is now facing charges. He was arrested this week, Tuesday to be precise. On charges of battery, domestic battery in the presence of a minor, and maybe looking at lengthy prison time. No, really, this happened. Okay, so it turns out a neo-Nazi is violent. Well, you know, that's a dog bites man story. Oh, of course a neo-Nazi's violent. That's why they're neo-Nazis. Big deal, Bob. So what? No. Mm-mm. Maybe you'll get an idea of, I mean, this is like something out of a William Faulkner novel or something. This is good stuff. How good is it? It's so good, it kind of needs a soundtrack. Oh, dadgummit. Sometimes things just don't cooperate. Maybe this is one of those days. Let's try this again. No, this will give you an idea of where we're going once I get the music to play in. Yeah, here we go. Matthew Heimbach, neo-Nazi, young neo-Nazi leader of the Traditionalist Worker Party, worked very closely with his father-in-law, Matthew Parrott. Yes, his name is Parrott. They worked together to build the Traditionalist Workers' Party closely. They were fundraising. They had all they were drawing people to their cause, little Nazis. And Matthew was married, of course, Heimbach. It gets a little confusing. Because Matthew Parrott and Matthew Heimbach are different people, but they're both Matthews. And Matthew Parrott and his wife, Jessica Parrott, well, they had a daughter. And that's who Matthew Heimbach married. And everything was going swimmingly for the young Nazis. Until Matthew Heimbach took a shine to his mother-in-law, Jessica. Yep, that's right. the the young up-and-coming neo-Nazi guy started an affair with his mother-in-law. They were, as we say here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole Trump Jr. Stan, a rompin'. They romped in one, they romped in the Heimbach home, they romped in the Parrot trailer. Yes, the Parrot trailer. Until Matthew Parrot found out about it. The affair went on for months and months and months. Sweating and grunting, and you're my mother-in-law, you're my son-in-law, you're my mother-in-law, and we're both Nazis, So eventually, after the affair was concluded, yeah. Well, it just didn't last long enough, but you get the idea. He sure do got a pretty mouth. Mother and daughter, who, of course, had both had sexy time with young Matthew there, they decided to hatch a plot whereby they would see if Matthew would try to bump boots with mother-in-law if given the opportunity. They set him up. Meanwhile, Matthew Parrot, the father-in-law, who had already been cuckolded by his own son-in-law, and remember, please, these are right-wingers and neo-Nazis, and they can't help but hoot and holler about cucks, which is short for cuckold. Well, it apparently goes beyond simply being an insult against people who they disagree with. They may be into it themselves. So, with the setup to the story, Nazi father-in-law stands on a box and peeps through the trailer window. I'm not kidding. And he's watching it all happen. And as he's watching, I mean, this is scripting from the Dukes of Hazzard, okay? As it's all happening, the weight of Matthew Parrot causes the box to collapse, and Matthew falls to the ground, gets up madder than an old wet hen, and goes a howling around the corner of the trailer, and goes into the house to confront Matthew Heimbach. Matthew Heimbach then puts Matthew Parrot in a headlock. It's the Heimbach headlock. I told you this was a good one. There's a reason I'm leading with it. And chokes out his father-in-law, who then eventually, after briefly losing consciousness, comes back to, at which point in time, he picks up a chair and throws it at Headlock Heimbach to get him to leave the trailer. And then Heimbach chokes him again and takes him into unconsciousness. Then Jessica Parrot, whom Heimbach had been romping with, grabbed her by the cheeks, making her bleed, according to the police report. The police were kind enough not to reference which cheeks Matthew Heimbach grabbed. Now, when they got run in by the local constabulary, and they started to fill out the paperwork, they listed white nationalist as their occupations. Heimbach, his wife, his mother-in-law, and his father-in-law. Race W. White, White, Work School, White Nationalists. So, by the way, Matthew Heimbach is on probation right now because of a shoving match in which he engaged with an anti-Trump protester at a Trump rally. Heimbach, the Nazi, Matthew, said it was Trump's fault. Trump made him behave violently at the campaign rally. The website for the Traditionalist Worker Party seems to have disappeared. And on the one hand, this is funny. I had to read the story several times before I stopped cackling enough to be able to deliver it on the program. I don't have to worry about rules of Christianity or anything, so I can absolutely take pleasure in this absolutely screwball episode of Nazis at each other's throats. For once, and this will make me a bad person, and I'll just have to learn to live with that. For once, I can say what a damn shame it was that there was no gunplay involved. There's a photograph of five of these Nazis. Matthew Heimbach is turned and facing the camera with his arms crossed across a clipboard. And they're all wearing their black Traditionalist Worker Party T-shirts. And then there are four other little Nazis who have their faces turned, their backs turned to the camera. And the message on the back of the T-shirt is, "Local solutions to the globalist problem." And their URL. But that's right, friends and neighbors. One of the leading young Nazis in the United States has brought himself to ground because he just couldn't resist the charms of his mother-in-law. Yeah, that's what the sign says outside the trailer, apparently. You're absolutely right, Brother Deacon Asa. If these sheets and pillowcases is a-rockin', don't come a-knockin'. Hee-wee! Uncle Daddy! Now, I mention all of this because there was a little something that happened in the Tennessee legislature. We talked about the Tennessee legislature last night. The Tennessee legislature, one guy tried to get a bill passed that would be a resolution. Democratic Representative Darren Jernigan of Nashville, inside the House State Government Subcommittee, could not get a second. You know, I move, then you get a second, etc. Couldn't get a second on, wait for it, a resolution condemning neo-Nazis. The Republican majority in the state of Tennessee could not find its way clear to condemn Nazis. Let's just burn that one in a little bit. The upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican majority of the legislature of the state of Tennessee didn't think it was important to condemn Nazis. Neo-Nazis, whatever. You know, this was done in the form of a motion inside the state government, House State Government Subcommittee. You listen to the language. And tell me if you think this sounds like something. I mean, it's a few paragraphs, but, you know, it's not going to take all night. Tell me if this sounds like a bridge too far to you. If you were a member of a government and something like this was presented as a motion, would you have any problem sticking your hand in the air and going, second? A resolution to denounce and oppose white nationalist and neo-Nazi groups and their actions. Whereas, recent tragic events have proven that white nationalism and neo-Nazism remain very real threats to social and racial progress, and whereas, throughout the course of our nation's history, white nationalism has promoted intimidation and violent repression of individuals solely on the basis of their race, ethnicity, religion, and immigration status, and whereas today, white nationalism has attempted to reinvent itself, self-identifying as the alt-right, yet their present-day rhetoric and terrorism conjure painful memories of our nation's past, and whereas, while free speech and assembly are bedrock values for Americans, white nationalist and neo-Nazi groups promote agendas that are irreconcilable irreconcilable conflict with our nation's foundational principles of liberty and justice for all, and whereas white nationalism and neo-Nazism are continuing to grow as menaces to societal order that seek to reignite social animosities, reverse improvements in race relations, divide the nation, and foment hatred, classism, anti-Semitism, and ethnic eradication, and whereas the white nationalist and neo-Nazi message of racial and social intolerance has led to senseless acts of violence that continue to terrorize members of ethnic, racial, and religious minority communities, and now, therefore, be it resolved by the House of Representatives of the 110th General Assembly of the State of Tennessee, the Senate concurring that we strongly denounce and oppose the totalitarian impulses, violent terrorism, xenophobic biases, and bigoted ideologies that are promoted by white nationalists and neo-Nazis. Be it further resolved that we urge law enforcement to recognize these white nationalist and neo-Nazi groups as terrorist organizations and to pursue the criminal elements of these domestic terror organizations in the same manner and with the same fervor used to protect the United States from other manifestations of terrorism. Be it further resolved that our state, the great state of Tennessee, and its people will not tolerate discrimination or hate in any form or manifestation, and that we stand united with resolve to promote and ensure equality for all Tennesseans. Be it further resolved that appropriate copies of this resolution to be prepared and transmitted to the President of the United States, all members of the United States Senate, all members of the United States House of Representatives, the Governor of the State of Tennessee, and all members of the Tennessee General Assembly. That's it. That's all there is. It was called House Joint Resolution 583. John Ray Clemens, Democrat Nashville, filed it. And then his colleague, Democrat Darren Jernigan, inside the committee, made a motion to hear the proposal. He couldn't get a second. Interviewed by the Tennessean, Representative Clemens said, "I'm in utter disbelief about what just happened. I didn't think there was anything controversial about this resolution." He went on and said, "I would love to pass a resolution denouncing white nationalists and neo-Nazis. But if I can't even get a second in a subcommittee, It evidences this Republican supermajority's refusal to denounce these hate organizations for what reason I cannot begin to imagine. Now, bear in mind, in Tennessee, they've had their little White Lives Matter rallies not too awfully far from Nash Vegas. They chanted things like, closed borders, white nations, now we start the deportations. Republican Governor Bill Haslam at the time said, we want to send a really clear message that these folks are not welcome in Tennessee. If you're part of the white supremacist movement, you're not somebody we want in Tennessee. Well, that's great, you know, if you're just saying it. But if you're trying to put the moral force of the... I know, it's kind of laughable just to use that phrase, isn't it? If you're trying to put the moral force of the legislature of the great state of Tennessee behind it... And, in fact, one of the groups that was there chanting their little, mouth open, mouth breathing, was, in fact, Matthew Heimbach's Traditionalist Worker Party. Yes. But, well, state of Tennessee just... can't quite get around to being absolutely positive that neo-Nazis are a bad thing. They're Trumpansies. They're maggots. They probably agree with their president that there are, you know, some of those neo-Nazis are good people. It's real. The language of the resolution makes perfect sense. They are dangerous. They are terrorists. One cannot help but wonder, for instance, who is behind the series of bombings in Austin, Texas. I don't know. I have no idea. But it's not lost on me that the victims, the targeted victims, have been people of color. And then, let's see, there's more. There's definitely more. I think this one comes out of the state of Illinois. And once again, there's some allegation of criminality involved. Oh, yeah. The guy apparently is a is from Illinois, if I understand it correctly. But the crimes are alleged to have happened in Minnesota. It was just a couple of days ago that the announcement came out from the feds that three rural Illinois men had been arrested on gun charges and are in fact suspects in the bombing of a mosque in Minnesota last year, as well as the attempted bombing of an Illinois abortion clinic. U.S. Attorney's Office in Springfield, Illinois, said... that 47-year-old Michael Hari, 22-year-old Joe Morris, and 29-year-old Michael McWhorter, all of Clarence, Illinois, the heartland, are implicated suspects in the explosion at the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota, as well as the attempted bombing of the women's health practice in Champaign, Illinois. Interestingly, Clarence, Illinois, is about 35 miles north of Champaign, Champaign-Urbana. And these guys are, you know, not just three bumpkins from the middle of Illinois. No. They, one of them at least, the guy named Hari, Michael B. Hari, the 47-year-old, does a lot of posting under the screen name Illinois Patriot. Yeah. And among other things, he sued the Department of Agriculture because he's got a bullshit food certification program, and he says that the FDA is muscling in on his turf. In his suit papers, the following quote appears, according to the Chicago Tribune. The people of the United States have rejected the Marxist doctrine that the government shall own the means of production. Yeah. I doubt if you're going to see his name on any lists of donors to Democratic campaigns. On the other hand, well, yes. I know, I know. The email is flooding in. Nah, it's not flooding, it's more of a trickle. Now, Bob, do you really think this gang is really worth the powder? Oh, come on. Really? A neo-Nazi banging away with his, well, not banging, bumping away and grunting and sweating and whatnot with his mother-in-law, and you're telling me you'd just blow past that, Marty? Really? Really? But the fact that we have a Nazi problem in the United States and a lot of people persist in thinking it isn't there, well, that is a problem. That's a significant problem. And we can't count on them to always be a bunch of I guess it's not incest, it's just weird as shit. No. And called upon to, you know, maybe this should become a trend. Maybe this should become a thing. Republicans being asked to denounce Nazis and watch them squirm. Because what you have to understand is where Trump is concerned and the whole movement is concerned, that's the base. Like I've said several times, I take Steve Bannon and Milo Yiannopoulos at their word when they say that more than half of the GOP base is alt-right. Okay, Reverbo, I've got a request. Oh, God, please don't say that again. maybe that's the... It's sad to say there was no photography. I got a picture of Matthew Heimbach. I don't have a picture of... No, Reverbo says I can't blow past it. Nazis in love with their mothers-in-laws. I bet Mother's Day is a real party around the old Heimbach homestead, don't you? Heimbach homestead, Heimbach headlock. I mean, the possibilities are endless. But, okay. some people, you know. Meanwhile, courtesy of Scott and Punky, we've got a long-distance dedication going out to Matthew Heimbach and Mother Parrot. Mother Parrot. Oh, yes. This should be good. It usually is.
From the Bible to the popular song, there's one theme that we find right along. Of all ideals they hail as good, the most sublime is motherhood. There was a man, though, who it seems once carried this ideal to extremes. He loved his mother and she loved him, and yet his story is rather grim. There once lived a man named Oedipus Rex. You may have heard about his odd complex. His name appears in Freud's index, 'cause he loved his mother. His rivals used to say quite a bit that as a monarch he was most unfit, but still in all they had to admit that he loved his mother. Yes, he loved his mother like no other. His daughter was his sister and his son was his brother. One thing on which you can depend is he sure knew who a boy's best friend is. When he found what he had done, he tore his eyes out one by one. A tragic end to a loyal son who loved his mother. So be sweet and kind to mother. Now and then have a chat. Buy her candy or some flowers or a brand new hat. But maybe you had better let it go at that. Or you may find yourself with a quite complex complex, and you may end up like Oedipus. I'd rather marry a duck-billed platypus than end up like old Oedipus Rex.
Well, of course, the legendary Tom Lehrer. A long-distance dedication going out to Mother Parrot and young Matthew Heimbach. Two Nazis in love. A little cowbell for Jim on this one. That ain't romping, says Jim. That's trumping. We may have a new vocabulary term. Thank you, Jim. Mother Parrot and her son-in-law Matthew were caught a trumping in the trailer. There's even an alliterative quality. Trailer trumping! Woo! Wherein he used the Heimbach headlock at the Heimbach homestead. Trailer trumping. Yeah. Meanwhile, note coming in from Robert in Australia. Bob, so this little family of Nazis, what's the end game for them? Deport everyone from the USA whose skin color doesn't match white or a paint color chart? And then what? With no one else to get their hate on with, they'll just start attacking each other, as they've already shown. Sad little people. Well, yes, they are, but they're also dangerous people. Very dangerous people. You want to bet? I would bet that Matthew Heimbach probably spent a little time and maybe bought some nutritional supplements from Alex Jones. And Alex Jones, well, we wouldn't know half the secret insane stuff going on in America today if it weren't for Alex Jones. No, for instance, we wouldn't know about those secret messages in the address by Rex Tillerson a couple of days ago. You know, the one where he didn't say Trump? Mm-hmm.
I want to speak now to my State Department colleagues and to our interagency colleagues and partners at DOD and the Joint Chiefs of Staffs, most particularly. To my Foreign Service officers and civil service colleagues, we all took the same oath of office. Whether you're a career, employee, or political appointee, we are all bound by that common commitment to support and defend the Constitution, to bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and to faithfully discharge the duties of our office.
Well, this is all coded.
As a State Department, we're bound.
Well, do you have your secret decoder ring out? Or are we just going to have to depend on Alex Jones? Because this is all coded.
Bound together by that oath.
This is really cryptic.
We remain steadfast here in Washington and at post across the world, many of whom are in danger-pay situations without their families.
This is some kind of signal to the Stay Behind Networks.
The world needs selfless leaders like these.
He's really...
Stay Behind Networks. Oh, left behind. Oh, dear God.
Proven to be a double
ready
agent.
To work with long-standing allies, new emerging Who's partners and allies,
with?
Who now many are struggling as democracies, and in some cases are dealing with human tragedy, crisis of natural disasters, literally crawling themselves out of those circumstances.
This is all coded.
These are experiences that no lecture hall in an academic environment or at a think tank can teach you. Only by people going to the front lines to serve can they develop this kind of talent. To the men and women in uniform, I'm told for the first time in most people's memory, the Department of State and Department of Defense have a close working relationship where we all agree the U.S. leadership starts with diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
The men and women in uniform at the Department of Defense, under the leadership of Secretary Mattis and General...
Here, let me try it. This is all coded.
Dunford, protect us as Americans and our way of life daily.
This is some cryptic stuff.
At home and abroad. As an all-volunteer military...
All right, well, he's just basically virtue signaling now, but that earlier stuff about taking the oath and everybody needs to stay at their posts and everything, that was... Stay at your post, I guess, means deep state. Stay there. Hang on. Cavalry's coming. But let me tell you, there's major infiltration. And look, I'm not even saying Tillerson's a bad guy. But he's a yes man. He can't handle the pressure of what I'm sure they've done to him.
What I'm sure they've done to him. Yes, they put him in the... put him in the orgasmatron and or they... I don't know, maybe... Ah, Jesus Christ. He's been... Wait for... I know. He's been... Ponerized! Jesus Christ. Did you hear anything, Chris? Well, you don't have your patented Alex Jones decryptation... a device implant, because of course you haven't paid him $99.95 for one of those yet. Great googly moogly. Like we said before, the real thing in that was the fact that he didn't mention Trump. But there's a phrase in there, and just because maybe it's something OCD or something wrong with my brain or something, but I pay attention to when phrases start bouncing around in public discourse, they just sort of leap out at me. And one of the new favorites of the white wing and the paranoids, like, you know, the weird freaks like Alex Jones, virtue signaling. Virtue signaling. It's one of those words that it means whatever people decide who are using it decide it means. It has there's no completely agreed upon definition. It's just that he was virtue signaling. Well, that's a damn good question, Brother Deacon Asa says. Does Vice President Pence also hear Alex Jones's raspy voice in his head? I'm asking for a friend. Oh, you and your friends. But yeah. So, well, like I said, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we're not hurting for any looniness. Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to right-wing, white-wing behavior that makes us go, oh! Yeah. And by the way, thank you, Charlie. Thank you very kindly. We are off and running on the combined challenges from Ralph's and Darlene. We are now $30 into it. We've got $95 to go on the challenges, and that would go a long way toward taking a big bite out of the deficit as it presently stands. Thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. Thank you, Darlene, for the challenge. $95 to go to finish the challenge and make that happen. So, please, we're at 4 minutes before the hour. It would be nice to, well, but please, let's not have a $700 deficit going into Friday on the front porch, because it takes a lot of the fun out of things. But anyway, off we go to Des Moines, Iowa, where the leader, the Republican leader of the Iowa Senate, resigned this past Monday. Senate Majority Leader Bill Dix, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, Bill Dix put out a one-sentence resignation letter. Yeah. I quit. No, that wasn't what it said, but it turns out that Majority Leader Dix was seen a hanging out in a bar there in Des Moines, Iowa. He was sitting there at the bar in Des Moines, and he was sitting next to a woman. They were, in fact, I guess we could say, sitting together, probably talking about their fine, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Republican, Christian, family values, when all of a sudden, in the video, what got posted up online, they all of a sudden start a kissing of one another. Now, there's nothing wrong with kissing. Kissing's good. If you're kissing somebody that you're supposed to be a kissing of. But it would appear, to put Jim's new neologism into play, they were a trumpin'. Because the lobbyist lady that Senator Dix, Sir Dix-a-Lot, was a kissing on was not his traditional family values, upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian wife. Mm-mm. No. She was the woman who was not his wife, which he has, apparently, because another Republican Senate President Jack Whitaker said, "I believe he made the right decision for himself and for his district, but most importantly, I believe he made the decision in the best interest of his family." So there's a family. Which sort of presupposes a spouse or an ex-spouse. Now, the woman was is a lobbyist for the Iowa League of Cities. They lobby on behalf of municipalities of the state of Iowa way. Seeing as how the minority leader of the Iowa Senate, Janet Peterson, said, "Because this involves Senator Dix and a lobbyist, there will be questions about the impact of this relationship on legislation." Remember, he was the most powerful Republican in the Iowa Senate. So, yeah. I've never voted for a Republican, so I can't speak to this. But when somebody goes to a polling place and votes for a Republican, especially a white Republican man, do they do so wondering how long the guy will be in office before he's caught trumping? Do you mark that little box or turn that lever or press that video game screen, say, and take it, maybe place an over under bet on how long it is before the guy with the traditional family values marriage is seen a LARPing on a female state lobbyist in some fern bar in Des Moines? Do you do that? Because I think if I was voting for Republicans, I would. I think bookies could make good money on taking bets on how long it is before some fine, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican tap dances on all them values. GOP, the Republican governor of Iowa, Kim Reynolds, said, "I believe he made the right decision in stepping down. Iowans hold their elected officials to a high standard, and as elected officials, we have an obligation to lead." Well, he did. He led her right over there behind them ferns and took to LARPing and trumping on her. Once again, it's not about the sex. It's about the hypocrisy. Well, yeah, I know. So that, too. Oh, and then this. Interesting story. Yesterday, of course, was the student walkout for safe schools. Imagine the courage it takes to be Justin Blackmon. He's one of 700 students at Wilson Preparatory Academy in Wilson, North Carolina. He's 16 years old. When 10 a.m. came and it was time for the walkout, he did. And for 17 minutes, he was all by himself. He'd talk to his classmates about it, but they didn't seem particularly interested there at the Wilson Preparatory Academy. He looked at his teacher a little before 10 and said, "I'm walking out for the national walkout." Teacher just let him go. That's good. He didn't get in trouble. But he took a lesson away from it. Justin did. He said, "Now I truly know that one person is all it takes. No matter the age, skin color, gender, it doesn't matter." The Wilson Preparatory Academy wouldn't comment on the walkout. Janet Connor Knox is the PR person for Wilson Preparatory Academy and told CNN, "We teach our students to be independent thinkers. Justin Blackmon is an independent thinker." But Wilson Preparatory Academy doesn't dare say anything about, because it's North Carolina and, you know, guns and God loves them some guns, right? That was not the case in other parts of the country, however. This is a bit of a follow-up. Thousands upon thousands of students all over the country walked out for 17 minutes yesterday. Well, students at one Missouri high school told BuzzFeed that they were locked out of school and they were briefly prevented from returning to their classrooms after they walked out. Then there's Manahawkin Southern Regional Middle School in New Jersey, where, wait for it, no, this is really good. At the same time as the walkout, school administrators scheduled an active shooter drill. And thereby prevented the students from being able to walk out. You know, by terrorizing them. Then there's the New Jersey high school principal who threatened to cancel prom if students walked out. Some students walked anyway. Most of the students, however, were shunted over to an assembly while school staff and police officers blocked the exits. That was Mount Olive High School in Flanders, New Jersey. There was a big difference in responses. Some schools helped students organize their walkout. Some schools understood that this was an act of civic participation, not thumbing their nose at education, but a desire to create the momentum in civil society to finally get something done. On the other hand, however, the ACLU, who monitored it, punished students, like in Lakeland, Florida, where the principal gets on the intercom and threatens detention. Park Hill School's principal, Brad Kinchlow, now this is in Missouri, lectured the protesters about facing the consequences of exercising their First Amendment rights. When you do exercise your First Amendment rights, sometimes there's a penalty to pay. I want you to know that society sometimes values your speech or your activity by how important it is to you, and if this act comes without a consequence, then it doesn't seem very important. And then told the children that they would have truancy charges placed against them, which they could clear by going to detention Wednesday or Thursday after school. You get the idea. You get the idea that some of these schools are not much interested in creating self-governing young people, but are, in fact, far more interested in creating compliant little zombies. This does not for a happy nation. This is not, no, this does not make a happy nation. In Schuylerville, New York, at Schuylerville High School, school officials were reported to have blocked a road leading out of the school with a pair of pickup trucks. There was an unannounced tornado drill in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, to keep students from expressing themselves or demanding safe schools. Santa Clarita, California, Saugus High School, truancy charges. Tough thing sometimes trying to run a self-governing nation and teaching people how to do it. Henry McMaster, as the governor of South Carolina, Stan, responding to the walkout, he said, "It appears that these school children, innocent school children, are being used as a tool by this left-wing group to further their own agenda. This is a tricky move, I believe, by a left-wing group. From the information I've seen, to use these children as a tool to further their own means. It sounds like a protest to me. It's not a memorial. It's certainly not a prayer service. It's a political statement by a left-wing group, and it's shameful. What we should all do, and what these students should do, I imagine a lot of them intend to do, is to pray and to hope for the families of those who were slain. Thoughts and prayers, y'all, but we don't want to actually do anything, you know, with the government to try to keep this sort of thing from happening ever again. Meanwhile, David Hogg, who has emerged as one of the leaders of the movement, went after Governor McMaster on the Twitter. And he said, those future voters will not reelect you, and they'll outlive you, too. Of course, and they may. That may turn out to be but it was shameful for them children to try to exercise their First Amendment rights. Oh, the only First Amendment rights they need to be exercising is the ones where they use the First Amendment to talk about how much they love the Second Amendment and how we need more guns in more schools in the hands of more teachers. Why? Well, because sometimes, you got to have the right teacher with the right gun. This was not the case. At Seaside High School on Tuesday in California. No. Dennis Alexander is a teacher there. I don't know why Seaside High School in California has a class on gun safety. I don't think gun safety is on the standardized tests. But he was teaching a class on gun safety and shot up the ceiling. Nobody got killed. A couple people got hurt. 17-year-old student was hit in the neck by falling debris from the ceiling, or maybe bullet fragments. They're not entirely sure. Police were called. Lessons resumed after the incident when the gun just went off. But, yeah, he's a real teacher. Mr. Alexander's also a member of the city council and a reserve police officer. For Sand City, California. This is apparently in Monterey County, California, where guns are banned on school premises, but there's an exception for a member of law enforcement. Well, Mr. Alexander is not a paid cop, he's just a volunteer. Now, here's the lesson that was being taught. How to use the gun to demonstrate how to disarm someone. And so he told the students he wanted to make sure the gun wasn't loaded, and then he shot the ceiling. The Monterey Peninsula Unified School District, they moved into crisis mode real quick. They sent an email out to parents saying, upon learning of the incident, our Human Resources Department, School Site Administration, and the Seaside Police Department immediately began to investigate the incident, including interviewing students in the class. Well, okay, good. So we've got a pretty good idea how that whole give guns to teachers thing is going to work out. Marty pointing out that Mr. Alexander forgot that first rule of gun safety, always assume a gun is loaded. Well, he was assuming it was loaded, Marty. That's why he shot the ceiling instead of one of his little scholars. Bill points out, I keep getting two-day-old stories about the students that walked out on 314, even here in Allentown. Why won't they tell us old farts what's going on anymore? Earther, meanwhile, says, subject line, darn kids! If these kids were doing disobedience to champion some right-wing cause, would the principals praise them and have all the other kids follow their example? You're damn Skippy! If they were walking out to demand constitutional rights for precious little fetuses, there wouldn't be nothing shameful about it. And of course, you know, McMaster there, the governor of South Carolina, stand, you know, if they'd done some praying, maybe some speaking in tongues, brought some snakes to pass around, a little oil, maybe a little canola oil for some anointing, rolled around a little bit on the ground and stuff, and that would have been good. That would have been, right. Steve, a member of the fraternity. Protest is a bad thing? Did I hear that right? Yes, you heard that right. Back to my betting on when you vote for a Republican. Steve adds, or bets on how long a Republican is caught sitting in an airport stall with a wide stance. Well, I guess you can all file it all under live dead girl or live boy, right? James says, hey, what about that lobbyist in Iowa? Does she have a husband? If so, was he aware? Was he by any chance the one who tipped the media? Is he a cuck or an accomplice? Just curious. You know, that was not delved into in the story, I must note. Meanwhile, down in Talabama, Jesus, these are hard. I mean, we have our fun and we carry on and stuff. But these are the sickening ones that you just wish would quit coming in. Mobile County, Alabama. Down there on the Gulf Coast. Little area called Domain Street on the southwest side of Mobile. Mama was getting ready to leave the house, and she stopped to speak to her mother-in-law. And that's when Mama's two-year-old walked up to Mama and Grandma and said, his ears was ringing. That's when they went in the bedroom, found out the two-year-old had blown his 11-year-old sibling away. They took the baby to the hospital so the hospital could pronounce the baby to be all dead and stuff. It was apparently Mama's gun. I'm sorry, Mama's freedom protector. And it was a handgun. It's loaded. Just left laying in the parents' bedroom. And Mama walked out and left the gun laying there. It probably just always laying there. And the two-year-old, being as curious as a two-year-old can be, killed his 11-year-old sibling, and it made his ears ring because guns are loud. But the story has a happy ending. No, it doesn't. There's a dead baby involved. A real one, not a fetus. The Mobile County District Attorney, a woman by the name of Ashley Rich, has declared that there were no elements of probable cause to prompt criminal charges. So, it's not a crime in Alabama, and we're probably a whole lot of other states, to just leave your NRA-approved Freedom Protector laying around, loaded, where the baby can get at it and blow away his 11-month-old sibling. That's not a crime. Nope. Mobile Police Chief Lawrence Batiste said, regardless of how this business plays out, as a parent, to know that you possibly left a weapon where your child could be injured, you've got to live with that pain for a long time. Yeah, so does the 2-year-old. So does the 2-year-old. But, you know, if firearm ownership is, as Heller says, a constitutional right, then does a right not come with responsibilities? And what the hell is this language in this quote from Chief Batiste, where he says, you possibly left a weapon. I think possibly left the building when the bullet exited the muzzle of the handgun and entered the innards of the 11-month-old baby there, Chief. Who else left? What? Did ISIS leave the loaded handgun laying there? Possibly? Damn. Did I say 11-year-old? I meant 11-month-old. I get in a hurry here sometimes. Thank you, Marty. Yeah, 11-month-old. The 2-year-old shot the 11-month-old. Well, thank you, I think. Steve from Georgistan, quoting me, a real one, not a fetus. You make me laugh and cry at the same time, brother. Meanwhile, as David in South Carolina Stan points out, dildos are illegal to leave around, I'll bet. Used to be in several states anyway. Gun, leave it around, lying around loaded. That's okay. I don't think you can even buy a dildo in Alabama. Yeah, Bill in Allentown says, so it protects your freedom, but not you or your family? Look, it's just another one of those moments where we find out the truth of the matter. If there is a firearm in the home, you are more likely to be killed or injured by it than if there is not one in the home. And you sort of have to go behind the story here and ask yourself why Mama had a loaded pistol in her bedroom. Nope, there's nothing in the story about Daddy. Is Daddy a bad man? And she keeps a loaded pistol laying around in case he comes back? Or are they afraid of a home invasion? Got bars on the windows? But then again, if you ask somebody like Dana Lush over at the National Ruble Rifle Association, America's wealthiest and most powerful domestic terror organization, they'll say that you don't get to question why Mama wanted to leave a loaded gun laying around. That is her right under the Constitution, and can't nobody question it. Oh, we are a cynical lot. James with an email. It ain't like they can't make another one. Jeez, Bob. Here's a question. Will Mama want a gun in her house anymore? All right, well, there's a little, and here's a little more justifiable cynicism, courtesy of Marty. I'll opine the baby must clearly be white. If black, the two-year-old child likely gets tried as an adult and the mother gets charged. I think there's about a 100% chance of that all being correct, Marty. But you know what? You know what Alex Jones worries about? Yeah. Not mama's leaving unloaded firearms laying around, because that's freedom.
They're always like, we're going to kill you. We're going to shut you up. We're like, we get that. Okay, we're here to stop you so all these innocents don't get run over. It's an instinct. It's a spirit. It's not like trying to be a hero. You can't roll over when you see him kidnapping little girls like he did in his town. He owned a tanning bed company. He was making money, middle class, and I had a big, nice house. I know Robin's story. I remember seeing demonization about him 10 years ago and halfway believing it, my own self. They took his house. They put him in prison. They tried to kill him. Now he's stronger than ever. So he's not doing this for his own self. He's doing it because the town he was in, it turned out 4,000 little girls were groomed for sex. Many of them kidnapped. Many of them killed. Many of them disappeared. This is an evil British pedophile government allied with Islam, because under its tenets of radical Islam, it follows pedophilia. And everybody knows about the giant scandals of pedophilia in England. The secret dungeons, the torture, the murder of little kids, prime minister slit little girls' throats. All that's coming out. The BBC is basically a giant pedophile cult. So, that, I mean, London Telegraph.
You know, when he starts talking about this crazy shit, I often watch the video to make sure his hands stay above the table, because I think he gets off on it. The BBC is basically a giant pedophile cult. Yep. Alex there, buddy. That wasn't no pedophile cult that left a loaded gun laying on the nightstand there on Domain Street in Mobile, Alabama. That's just mama. Or daddy. Or maybe grandma. But it wasn't ISIS. Because, see, Arthur said, oh, yeah, Kincaid, so you want her to lock up the gun? Well, what if some terrorist Muslim had come and shot her child? Huh, Kincaid, are you okay with that? Huh? Now, see, that's the whole thing about ambushes. As I've said before, they get to shoot first. I'll tell you what. If you're Wayne LaPeter and you get the Alabama story, what do you say? The only way to stop a bad toddler with a gun is a good toddler with a gun? Jesus. So we're at the halfway mark of the program, and not even halfway done with half of the stuff that's in the stack. Jeez. And like I said, we've got $95 to go on Darlene's challenge, and Charlie is the only one to respond thus far. Charlie needs some friends. Charlie needs some neighbors to step up and help us keep this, keep all the plates spinning on all the sticks. I despise talking about fundraising with a purple passion. But running around with $544 deficits is not good. We could knock that down by $250 if we raise another $95. If there's anybody out there that wants to help out with $95 or some combination thereof to get us to $95, then that'll take the fundraising deficit down to $294. And maybe we can work on $494 tomorrow evening. Note coming in from Silent R. Lamar. this one goes back to the California story there. I want to know if the ceiling is pressing charges. Well, we'll just have to see if there are any follow-ups on that. Probably not. Probably no charges be filed. Because he was just trying to teach them about their freedom. Right? Yeah. So we'll take a break. It is Thursday. That means we've got the Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And your calls. You know how to reach the program, of course, 304-574-8178. Toll free, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. That'll get you right in there, as does Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn. Okie doke. So maybe during the break we will knock down that last $95 of the challenge and get started on the rest of it. That would be hugely helpful if we could. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
I'm It's Thursday, March 15, 2018.
Look, I think the science needs to continue to develop.
The U.S. may soon have its first ever climate science-denying Secretary of State.
Climate change is accelerating catastrophic water events at an unprecedented rate.
World leaders sound the alarm over global water scarcity crisis. Black lung disease surges back in coal country. Toymaker Lego goes greener with plant-based plastics. Plus,
a $320 million ice wall was built underground to keep water at bay. The barrier is failing.
7 years after the meltdown, Japan struggles to contain Fukushima's radioactive wastewater.
All of those failures and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
With respect to climate change, I've read countless studies.
Really? Really, Mike Pompeo? You've read countless climate change studies? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, my world is turned upside down because I'm actually sad that the former CEO of ExxonMobil will no longer be our Secretary of State.
Yep, indeed. This week, President Trump fired U.S. Secretary of State and, as you mentioned, former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson and nominated current CIA Director Mike Pompeo to replace him. And that spells bad news for what is left of U.S. climate policy. While Tillerson did much to undermine the State Department and U.S. climate action, at least he accepted climate science and he advocated for the U.S. to stay in the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. But Pompeo supports Trump's decision to withdraw from the global accord, and if Pompeo's nomination is confirmed by the U.S. Senate, he would be the first climate change-denying Secretary of State.
And make no mistake about it, this guy is really a climate science denier.
Yep, in a 2013 appearance on C-SPAN, back when he was a Kansas congressman, Pompeo denied the global consensus among climate scientists on dangerous climate change.
Look, I think the science needs to continue to develop. I'm happy to continue to look at it. There are scientists that think lots of different things about climate change. There's some who think we're warming. There's some who think we're cooling. There's some who think that the last 16 years have shown a pretty stable climate environment.
Okay, that's classic climate denierism right there. This is Mike Pompeo. He was from Kansas, Koch brothers country, a former Tea Party congressman. Do you suppose that his climate denialism has anything to do with the fact that he wouldn't be there but for the Koch brothers?
It seems pretty darn likely. And as if to underscore the importance of the international impacts of climate change, a new joint report released on Wednesday from the World Bank and the United Nations warns that the world faces a looming global water crisis. Because global warming is altering rainfall patterns around the world, the report projects that by 2030, more than 700 million people will face intense water scarcity, potentially triggering conflicts over water resources, especially in volatile regions.
Oh, I'm sure Mike Pompeo has read that report, and he's seen the ones that contradict it, and so he's going to do nothing about it.
Yeah, he's not going to help negotiate or deal with his international security issue as Secretary of State.
As Secretary of State.
Here in the U.S., federal scientists say black lung disease has surged again in coal country. Black lung is a terminal lung disease that afflicts coal miners who breathe in coal dust. It had been in decline for years, but in a survey of medical records in Appalachian states, the scientists discovered the largest cluster of advanced black lung disease ever recorded. The scientists say they were surprised to see the advanced black lung disease even in young miners in their 30s and 40s. The researchers suggest that as Appalachia's coal deposits become depleted, miners are being exposed to more fine particle silica dust found in deeper coal seams.
Oh, no, you mean
clean, beautiful coal.
Sadly, no. Meanwhile, in Japan, this week marked the 7th anniversary of the historic earthquake and tsunami disaster that caused the meltdown of 3 nuclear reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Plant owner TEPCO announced this week that a $320 million underground ice wall is failing to stop groundwater from seeping into the plant, and that's preventing the company from removing melted radioactive fuel at the site. And it could undermine the entire decommissioning process for the plant, already projected to take 30 to 40 years. But there is a bit of good news. The maker of famous Lego toys is going greener. The Danish toy maker will phase in its first ever Lego bricks made entirely from plant-based material, a bioplastic made from Brazilian sugarcane. Starting this year, they'll add the new pieces with the goal of transitioning to 100% sustainably sourced plant materials for all of its building bricks. It is still a type of plastic, but switching from oil-based to plant-based plastics will cut Lego's carbon footprint by about 70%.
Well, we will take whatever we can get at this point. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool.
And it's about 18 minutes before the hour as we head into the second half of the program. For this Thorn in the Side Thursday, I'm Bob, and I can happily report that thanks to Microwave Dave, and thanks to Robert in Australia, who says, extract digits, everyone who can contribute unless you like dead air. Thank you, Robert, because that's what it boils down to. And thanks also to Roberto. Thank you, Roberto. Between Roberto and Microwave Dave and Robert in Australia, the challenge is met, and we are actually on our way into the rest of the deficit. So that we've got 294 to go. That takes us down to 274. That takes us down to $270, and working on it here. That's $270.42 because of the exchange rate with Australia. $270.42 to finish. The challenge got met. That's tremendous. Thank you so much for making them, Ralphs and Darlene in Connecticut. And thank you again to Microwave Dave and Charlie and to Robert in Australia and to Roberto. Thank you very much. And now anybody wants to jump in alongside that merry band, maybe we can get down to just having an ordinary Friday on the front porch if we can $270.42, okay? That's where we are. So let's run over and check in and see what's on Jim's mind. Hey, Jim.
Good evening.
I'm right fond of that new word, a trumpin'.
Well, listen, I don't mean to, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't mean to demean from the interim stories that separate now and the way you open. But when you open with that, with an 88mm Mark 7 tank salvo with those people, you really knocked me right out of the chair.
Well, I thank you.
I sent you what I consider to be their weather, their weather inculcation. I don't know if you still have it in your email or not, and you may read that if you wish, and that is up to you.
I'm looking for it. I saw it. Okay, yeah. Now, Bob, that's what I call crappins in low cotton. Ooh-wee!
No, there's one more lower than that.
You were okay. Trumpin', not rompin'. I got that one.
It's called the weather inculcation.
That one didn't arrive?
Well, I'm sorry it didn't.
Oh, wait. Oh, no, there it is. Bob, these folks have a weather invocation. I'm the summer when it's not and sultry. When it's hot and sultry, 'tis no time to commit adultery. But in the winter, when frost is on the pumpkin, now that's the time to go Peter Duncan.
That's it, and that is so terrible. And I've got something even worse than that. And I'm going to have to sing it to you.
Oh, no. There's going to be singing? Okay.
Well, I mean, hey, man, even Frank Sinatra got scary stroked. All right. These lips were made for kissing. These hips were made for bliss, and these arms were made for holding you all day, every night, ole, out of sight.
Oh, dear, Jim. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. But, yes. I'm right there.
Now, if that's not bad, I don't know what is.
Oh, well, you're in rare form this evening, Jim. There's no doubt about it.
Well, remember, there's an old maxim. Those who lust in the dust will die in the dust.
Well, you know, I think from now on we're also going to have to, let's put it this way. The Iowa Senate Majority Leader had that lobbyist in the Heimbach headlock.
Sure he did. By the way, that song is not original with me. It comes from, it's a Western movie with Divine and Tab Hunter, Cesar Romero, and let's see.
That by God is an all-star cast.
Absolutely. It's Lust in the Dust. And there's another lady in there who's just marvelous, who's always going on about Tab Hunter's dingle bobs. Tab Hunter comes in Clint Eastwood with the serape and all that kind of stuff. But it's just the craziest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
But that was really something there. Oh my God.
Well, that is a piece of work indeed. But better songsmiths than you or I could ever hope to be could probably take the melody to Jackson Brown's Lawyers in Love and turn it into Young Nazis in Love, and it could be hilarious.
Oh yeah. Listen,
let me just ask you a serious question. Is it okay to revel in bad things happening to Nazis? I'm just checking in here.
No, I don't think so.
It is okay.
Because I can tell you one thing. There's a lot of positive things that are being projected about them. And I've got a little story here if you've got a second or two.
Sure.
You know, I told you about Netflix and the program we were both watching.
Yeah, Babylon Berlin.
Exactly. And I was trying to get that on my Kindle. And I called the Kindle people and tried to explain to them about Berlin and this, that, and the other. And I had this guy on there, and these people really don't know a lot of English. They read from scripts. What he did was to download one of the apps on my laptop. I'm not laptop, but on my Kindle, on my YouTube, were all these things about Adolf Hitler. It must be at least 2 hours long. And they have one of the things that struck me as being incredible. This guy is making a documentary. It's called something about seeing what's left of Hitler. He gets on a motorcycle. He goes all over that area of Berchtesgaden, all area of the towns located, and even finds these benches that Hitler used to sit on, and he points them out, and then he goes to Eva Braun's place in Munich, and then he goes to Martin Bormann's house, and this is where it was, and he points out, I mean, it's a great tour of the Obersalzberg if you want to take it, but I was just kind of amazed. And the background music they used for it was some Enya.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, it was in adulation. There's no question about it. No question. And all this got loaded on my YouTube, and I don't know who did it, some guy in the Philippines or wherever, but it's there. And it's 2 hours of all these things that come on, these little vignettes, and you can see the stuff. And the reason I bring it out is this stuff is really now becoming quite in vogue, quite popular, and people are looking back on it with some
right, degree. because enough time has passed now that the generations that had to fight and bleed and die to stop them
exactly.
aren't around to warn people anymore. And I've mentioned it before, but there's this line from the old movie Excalibur, where Nicol Williamson playing Merlin says, "For it is the doom of men that they forget."
Hell yeah.
And that's true, Jim. It's absolutely so. Now, you know, you got a whole new young crop of Nazis, and you got people
sure
like the Tennessee legislature that just can't cope with it, or else damn sure wants to try to figure out a way to get them to vote for them.
I mean, Bob, think of all these places where he lived and touched and visited. I didn't know this, but in 2012, they removed his parents' grave. It had gotten so bad. There's just a blank space in the cemetery wall where they were buried. But nonetheless, that was pointed out, and all of his big cars were pointed out. I mean, it was one part was just one fantastic auto show in the 1930s. I mean, I found it interesting, and I found it frightening.
Well, the frightening part, without a doubt. Now, is some of this countered by the fact that these people behave like, say, this Heimbach dude did? But it doesn't take away how deadly they are. Remember, these white nationalists, whatever you want to call them, you know, look, they make a point of not marching around with swastikas anymore. Well, we ain't got no swastikas. You can't call us a Nazi. But the fact of the matter is, you know, Nazi is as Nazi does, and if it steps like a goose and it honks like a goose, it's a Nazi.
There you go.
As far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we got bombings, we've got murders using automobiles, we've got shootings, we've got... you know, for Christ's sakes, you know, I reported it a couple of nights ago, but one of the stories that's probably bothered me more than any other is this middle school teacher down in Florida who was doing this poisonous vitriolic podcast and bragging about how she hid her Nazi leanings from the school administrators and was quietly indoctrinating the students. Now, there's no guns, there's no bombs, there's no knives, there's no goose-stepping or anything in any of that, but that is terrifying, and that is dangerous.
Let me tell you something. I am quite familiar with a lot of that going on. And I'm not going to mention names. I'm not going to say things about people. But I have seen this in my own personal life. And I have seen it in the schools where I went to school. And honestly and truly, it is extremely scary. And it's been going on for an awfully long time.
And I was pondering just what it was about that resolution that would make it so that the Democrat who introduced it couldn't even get a second to it in committee, let alone bring it to the floor for a vote. And then I realized what it might have been. During the break, while the Green News Report was playing and everything, I really do. I think about these things. And it occurred to me that maybe it was the reference to law enforcement that stopped them, because that's another element where we cannot be sure how infiltrated we are. Because remember, there are these oath keepers out there and these 3%ers. And we know, for instance, from the, and I've cited it before, but the shooting of the Dallas police officers a year or so back. One of them was all tatted up with Aryan neo-Nazi symbology and iconography. Now, you don't get that shit put on your skin unless you believe in it.
No, you don't.
And they are inside law enforcement, and they are inside the military.
Well, I mean, do you remember that movie, and I can't recall the title of it, with John Voight, who's going back to find out his own roots, and it starts in 1963 when President Kennedy was killed. and he basically goes underground and is trying to infiltrate into one of the SS groups that help these people get away.
I can't remember that, no.
It's a damn good movie. I wish I could remember the title of it, too. But, I mean, he goes all the way into it, and he finds out that all the people in the police everywhere are neo-Nazis, and they're wishing for the Fourth Reich to come back, and they're planning to build an atomic bomb that will blow Israel off from that, stuff like that. God, why can't I remember that? I'm sorry. Maximilian Schell's in it, too. That'll help you. He plays the lead Nazi this guy's trying to find. But, you know, that movie is basically come to life. I think you've got a lot of underground stuff like that, a lot of people who are definitely connected and who are well-wishing for a return of those times.
So here's a question. So here's a question for you, Jim. How do you root that shit out?
You can't. There ain't no way you can.
Let me see if I can ask a more nuanced question. How do totalitarian fascist movements with a predilection for violence, Clarity just said, remember, don't forget the train slasher in Portland last year, Mr. White Christian that he was. But how do you juxtapose those with the First Amendment? Is this an inherent flaw to an attempt at, and when I say liberal, I mean classical liberalism, the classical liberal idea of an open society? Can it exist in a world with Nazis? Or yeah, is that a design flaw that's baked in, that because you provide freedom of expression, it means sooner or later you're going to let the Nazis are going to come along and do what Nazis do?
They're going to make something bad out of something good. That's it. And as far as you rooting about, if you ever tried to root out kudzu,
yeah, or Multiflora Rose, I know.
I'm serious, but that's just the way it is. But anyway, I apologize for insulting the ears of your audience with my raucous.
Oh, and by the way, the crack horn community family congregation recognizes it. Yes, that's the Odessophile.
The Odessophile. That's it. And it's one of the better movies I've ever seen. And it's as true as anything you could imagine. A couple of years ago, you were in Germany, and you saw the beginnings, well begun, of revivalism of that stuff. That's it. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it is.
That's just the way I look at it, and you just can't rip it out. It's there. I mean, I wish there were some magical cure or some type of chemotherapy that could be applied mentally that would do that. No, it's not going to. It's there. And even, you know, in the latter days of the Third Reich, there were those people who said, yeah, it's going to come back. And even old Hermann Goering said that they'd be building statues to him within 100 years. So there it is. But anyway,
That may be true. And by the way, thanks to Scott and Punky and Samson. Samson just jumped in and helped out with fundraising in a big way too. That's tremendous. A number of people did jump in. Marty did as well, pointing out that it was the Odessophile. Now I gotta go see if I can watch it somewhere.
Oh yeah, you need to watch that. And by the way, I didn't mean to scare anybody's pet.
You're fine, Jim. You're fine.
Like bird with my raucous thing of that. But when you were talking about those people, I was just thinking just about that would be about the kind of looks all they would see.
Yep, exactly. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Well, I've enjoyed the program, and you keep it up.
All right, you keep enjoying it. We got another hour of it left.
Listen, what happened on my site? Did you just disappear?
Oh, headonradionetwork.com? No, it's been suspended. We got hacked, so the web host suspended it.
Yeah, you were there, and then you weren't. I wonder what had happened.
Yeah, it got hacked. It got hacked.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm going to try to get it fixed, but that really is way above my pay grade. So.
Well, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
All right, you take care, and thank you.
All right, later, Jim. Bye.
Bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from just across the gorge. And seriously, thank you to Samson for jumping in. That takes us down to, golly, I think $200 to go, which is tremendous, huge even. Thank you very, very much indeed. So we're on the way. I had a nice note just a minute ago from John, who reminded me of something that I hadn't thought of in a while. He said, I was a fan of John Denver's Country Roads, and then I think of looking for a parody of the song, and I found the Country Roads protest song. You have my support. Thank you. Thank you, John. Yeah, that's... that's actually not John Fox on that on that particular one. That's some friends of mine from down in the southern part of the state, and there's some pretty darn fine musicians on there that I'm not allowed to name, but... Almost Level. That's the, you know, Almost Level, West Virginia. God, that was years ago. And by the way, Haley tells me regarding my notice of the phrase virtue signaling. Haley says, I've heard that phrase used by some on the left, although they're more from the purity pony wing. Yeah, I've seen it there too. But again, it's one of those meaningless gobbledygook words that just stands in for whatever it is that's grieving the person who's using it. And if I may, I'll take a minute and also point out that I am sick to pieces of the word tribal. I think I've mentioned this before. If you're tempted to use it, don't. If you're, stop telling us how to use words, Bob. There, I beat you to it. It's used, and I heard it used this morning by a woman who's written a book about it, and she's a professor at the Yale Law School and whatnot. But it's used to describe the fact that we are an extremely politically polarized nation at the moment. And I don't know who's responsible for putting that word in play that way. But I wish they'd quit it. And I wish people would quit perpetuating it. Because I have a tremendous amount of respect for tribal peoples. And when the word tribal is used in regard to American politics, it's used in that regard in a pejorative sense. To be tribal is to be bad. To stick to your principles is to be bad. And I guess we're all just supposed to be some sort of a bunch of little center-right automatons, and then people writing books at Yale would be happy or something. But the tribal peoples that I know of in the 21st century are actually some of the most reliable people to work democratically to try to solve considerable and quite often environmental justice potential disasters. The people who stood up against the combined billion, gajillion dollar forces of TransCanada and of the Dakota Access Pipeline, those were tribal peoples. The people who stopped a quarter-mile deep, 20-mile-long goddamn mountaintop removal operation in northern Wisconsin. Tribal peoples. Tribal peoples are people who understand how to operate and how to exist for the greater good of the whole community and not engage in toxic selfishness. That is the very antithesis of the people that we're describing as being tribal. It's an awfully damned incorrect usage of the word. And it just glistens in the darkness with the wealth privilege and the white privilege whatever privilege you care to attach to it is you can see it from space. And it disgusts me. It is a slur. It is a racial slur, an ethnic slur, whatever you care to call it. That word is a slur. And I don't come from maybe a few thousand years ago, tribal peoples. So I really don't have standing to complain about it except as a practitioner of the art of word knowing. Whatever it is that they're going after, it is not described by the word tribal, and I wish they'd stop it. Signing off, just wondering, Lee in New York City says, is the political use of tribal from shows like Survivor, where people were divided into tribes? I honestly don't know. But it started, I heard it coming into usage in the aftermath of the 2016 election. I've seen it used to describe the people in their various camps on the Democratic side of things, whether it be the burnouts or the hilarians, you know, the hardcores, and also, of course, the maggots. It's really, you know, like I said, I don't know where it comes from, but it needs to go away. Because we've got this thing where we just have to come up with new abuses of the language. No, I'm no Academie Française or anything. It's not going to be a quarter pounder. It's going to be a Royale with avec fromage. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the desperate attempt to come up with new ways to say old things where the language that we had before was perfectly accurate and perfectly effective. But somehow or another, it's good for your social media presence if you can drill down and become granular in talking about your virtue signal your opposition to being tribal. See what I mean? So, I mean, that's just that. We're actually down to $200 to go. And in 51 minutes, maybe we could take it down even further so it's not $400 tomorrow night. Thank you, everybody who's jumped in. Thank you so very much indeed. I got one great big whopping humongous bill that will get paid as soon as the program's over tonight. Meanwhile, let's run over to the phones and check in with Scott and find out how far he is into the first season of Squidbillies. Hey, Scott.
No, well, hi, Bob. Let's check in with Scott and Punky, but let's not talk about Squidbillies yet.
Okay.
All right. If you do have a chance and can find a place to stream it, I heartily suggest and recommend the Odessa file. Wait a minute, Punky, come on over here. Going over there. He was on my shoulder and he decided to shriek. and that is never good.
Punky doesn't like being on hold. Punky's persnickety that way.
Hey, well, he's something. He's just he's my favorite little bird in the world. But anyway, yeah, if you do get a chance and can find Odessa File, it's quite good. I'll tell you why he's shrieking. He knows what I'm going to do. I was inspired by Jim's call.
Oh, is there going to be more singing on the program tonight?
Just a little bit. And this may be the shortest call I've ever done.
Going to hang up on you, am I?
No, I may hang up on me. Jesus, I got to calm him down. I'm going to sing, Punky, whether you like it or not. Now go in your house and hum along. Okay. This is, and you, the people who are old enough probably remember the folk song from the 50s and 60s, Little Boxes Made of Ticky Tack, Little Boxes All the Same. But anyway, I took a stab at, since the talk earlier was about Nazis, I got at least one verse of the song, which I have titled Little Nazis. And I do this with apologies to the listeners and to Malvina Reynolds, who I think wrote the song. You ready? Are you sitting down?
Yes. The question is, do I leave the headphones on or do I take them off?
Whatever works. Okay. Little Nazis on the hillside, little Nazis ranting, Adolf speak. Little Nazis on the hillside, little Nazis all the same. There's a white one, and a white one, and a white one, and a white one. And they're all ranting, Adolf speak, and they all look just the same. So that's just one verse. Somebody else will have to pick up the gauntlet.
Yeah, because it's not second verse, same as the first.
No, there's a lot of, there's
Henry the Eighth, I am. No.
There's drinking martinis dry and going doctors and lawyers and business executives, and some fun could be had with it. But anyway, that's pretty much all I've got. I was going to talk about the student walkout the other day, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, if there's a bee under your bonnet, by God, let it out.
Well, I kind of sent it to you in the form of an email a little while ago, but I'll give you the highlights if you want.
Okay,
where's, wait a minute. Let me get on the page where I had it.
You know, you're going to, he is so going to shit in your hair for singing. Yeah, no. See, you're working his corner now.
So what else is new? I mean, that little bird, those little creatures will eliminate on average every 20 minutes. Not that I've timed him, but anyway. All right, I was gratified to see the large level of participation in Tuesday's national student walkout against gun violence. Politicians need to pay very close attention, not just because it's right, but because many of these same students will soon be registered voters. They're engaged and eager to convey their wishes at ballot boxes across the country. And for the politicians who are in the pocket of the NRA, the message is crystal clear. In 2018 and 2020, your job will be at risk if you choose not to engage in responsible legislative action now. You've been warned. And I posted that the other night, but then I had a postscript because it came to mind something that's somewhat related. And while I'm thinking about it, I sincerely hope that at the big anti-gun violence demonstrations later this month, I think on March 24th, I sincerely hope the turnout will be absolutely staggering. And at the risk of coming across like a cranky geezer with some kind of back-in-my-day rant, I vividly recall actually being at an anti-war march in D.C. in 1969 that attracted upwards of 500,000 participants. We achieved that turnout by means of little more than word of mouth, flyers on phone poles, and maybe a few dozen so-called underground newspapers around the country. So a message to the kids. With your modern technology, laptops, tablets, and smartphones, all linked to the internet, I do hope that several million of you will be showing up on the 24th. Okay? So that was my little bee under my little bonnet.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hope there's a blue bajillion people in D.C. I didn't see where they sorted out the issue of their permit.
I haven't either. I heard that there was some kind of talent show that apparently was scheduled at the same venue at the same time, so the students didn't get an alternate, or their permit request was turned down. But you're right, I haven't heard if there's a new location. Hell, around the NRA headquarters in Fairfax might be a nice, that's pretty wide open spaces.
I think that's the perfect place. About 100,000 people, God only knows how deep, around the NRA headquarters, and just making Wayne LaPeter and whoever else is there shit themselves for a little bit would be fine by me. I mean, it would be. I'm just being mean here. But I'd kind of like for the terrorists to be afraid once, you know?
Yeah, well, it's about time that the tables were turned.
But then again, maybe they start shooting.
No, well, they're not allowed to have guns in the NRA headquarters, ironically.
Oh, wait, I forgot about that, yes.
So, I mean, a turnabout is fair play. At long last, let their bowels turn to water, you know?
Yep.
I mean, come on.
I know, and by the way, you've got, I think this is a vote of confidence. No offense, says Darlene in Connecticut, but I much prefer Scott's singing to yours, Bob. Well,
oh,
so
no.
Do I. So does everybody. That's why I use me singing as a threat.
The only thing worse than my singing is that Pat Boone heavy metal song that we played.
Oh, it's been a while. It must have been a while since I've played Mrs. Miller. No, there's worse than Pat Boone. There's worse.
How gentle is the rain? Oh, Mrs. Miller, she was a trip.
My particular favorite is Mrs. Miller singing "These Boots Were Made for Walking."
I used to be able to do falsetto voices pretty well, but I can't anymore. This woman had, and she whistled. And I remember the liner notes on the back of her album, written, I think, by Gary Owens, the guy on Laugh-In. That her technique for getting a high pitch in her whistling was to, before the recording session, take a mouthful of ice cubes. And it did something to shrink the membranes or something, to polish her embouchure or something. I don't know. I don't even have a turntable, much less that record anymore, so I can't quote it directly. But anyway, tell you what, I'm going to make this a short call because I know folks are probably wanting to get in, and Punky just will not shut up, and I don't want to put him in the other room because then he'll be mad at me. So.
Oh, I understand completely.
Unless you've got a question for me.
No,
something you've never asked but you always wanted to.
No, this is not the Scott and Punky AMA portion of the program. although you did get a note from James in Illinois with regard to your lyric.
Yeah.
James says, work Schickelgruber into it.
Well, maybe one of the other verses will accommodate that. I'll have to play with it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, you and Punky have a lovely evening. And since we're not going to talk to the end of the program, what a great time to go and check out Squidbillies.
Yeah, but I'll have to wait till the show's over because I don't want to miss an action-packed moment of today's show because it's been stellar so far.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Stellar!
Stellar! You know, Uncle Jed, I was just over there on the Brando lot. You know what they got over there, Uncle Jed? Motivation. They're just swimming in it. Jesus.
All right, dog.
All right, we'll see you, Scott. Later.
Take care.
Yeah, There's never a bad time for a Jethro Bodine quote. There's just not. Bill in Allentown's having a hard time remembering something. For some reason, I can't remember what movie this fictional hotel is in. Could you or someone else in the Horn community help me with it? The Overlook Hotel is in The Shining. Yes. Yeah, that's The Shining. And by the way, I had a note earlier today from Matt up in Humboldt, who asked me to please tell the entire community, because he said if I'm trying to order it in and I can't remember the website, then probably somebody else can't either. The world's most wonderful sausage is Conecuh sausage. Just a brief moment of food porn. Conecuh, Conecuh. And if you go to, if you live in a state like I do, West Virginia, where you can't get it, but now I know I can. All I have to do is drive to drive 62 miles to Bluefield, Virginia, and back. 125 mile round trip thereabouts. I can get it at Food City down there. Anyway, if you have to order it in, Conecuh sausage, Sausage, ConecuhSausage.com will get you there, and you can and you can see if they're shipping. Meanwhile, let's keep things going. We're kind of right there at that $200 mark, trying to wipe out the deficit. So, if you want to jump in and help, this would be a great time. Thanks to everybody who has, and I'll try. I got to figure out how to get the website sorted out. I have no idea what happened to it, but we will. But meanwhile, the PayPal interface is absolutely accessible. Just scroll down over at Headon.live, HEADON.LIVE. And it's Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
20 toes a trumpin', Trump pansy Nazis in love. 20 toes a trumpin'. Yep, there they are.
I think it's got real potential, Clarity.
I wanted to share a.
And you're a real musician, so I trust you with it.
Yeah. I found somebody that has a more nihilistic view about this gun issue. A friend of mine that lives in the great state of Michigan, and he does research in his retirement. Anyway, it's about gun control. Someone asked a legitimate question, and I want to copy and paste my response. The question was why I thought today's school walkout is an issue that is relatively meaningless. My opinion is that it's meaningless has basis in fact. 17 kids were killed in a school a week ago. This is the 30th shooting this year, 18th in a school. Obviously, there has to be a social reaction and a political reaction. And what may not be obvious is that these reactions must be controlled from the top down, and they are. The social reaction, children walking out of school across the country, was controlled. The political reaction, because children and parents across the country are outraged, has to be controlled. Controlling the social reaction comes first because that reaction happens immediately. There's an immediate outrage displayed across the media stage. The political reaction, by necessity, takes time. By necessity, because drawing the political reaction out over weeks and months allows the social reaction, the outrage, to die down, so the correct political reactions can be implemented without further outrage. The outrage is immediately dissipated by the walkout and then completely erased by time. The controlled political reaction is then nothing. Nothing is done to alter gun ownership policies. Laws are passed, made easier for people to access weapons. If we go back and examine the last 100 years of civilian weapons ownership, we'll see the legislation passed over the last 100 years actually makes it easier and easier for normal law-abiding citizens to obtain weapons as we move through those last 100 years. I'll give you some recent examples. The number of silencers registered with the ATF has exploded in recent years, tripling since 2011, going from 360,000 registered silencers in 11 to 1.36 million in 2017. The number of silencers jumped 50% from 2016 to 2017, according to ATF data. The president's son, John Trump Jr., has been a big supporter of quote-unquote Healing Protection Act and recorded a video touting the benefits of accessory silencers with Joshua Waldron, CEO of top silencer manufacturer Silencer Company. Silencers are now legal in 40 states. The latest ATF data shows there are more than 630,000 machine guns registered with the ATF. Those are registered ones.
Yeah, and we should be clear, when we say machine guns, we mean machine guns, not semi-automatic rifles where you have to pull the trigger every time, not bump stocks. These are the ones where you squeeze the trigger once and a bajillion bullets come out until you stop squeezing the trigger.
From Prohibition days, the Tommy gun.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, according to ATF, more than 5.2 million weapons were registered under the NFA, the National Firearms Act. Applies to machine guns. What we'll see politically after all the outrage, bump stocks will be outlawed, maybe. And slightly more stringent rules will be applied to gun purchases by people with a history of mental illness. New laws will be passed, making it easier for law-abiding citizens to arm themselves. Since Sandy Hook, we passed more than 70 laws, making it easier. Time-consuming. This is the historic path the country's taken for 100 years, making a coordinated walkout by students valueless in terms of political policy, but necessary to give those students and parents a feeling they can quote-unquote do something in a system where they really can't do anything at all. A system that will not respond to their misery in their eyes in the end. A controlled nationwide walkout was necessary to the political system to quell the social outrage and to give, quote-unquote, the people an immediate emotional outlet. So we had a controlled walkout. The political system does not want to disarm America. The political system wants guns in your hands, SSRIs in your brains, food additives in your stomach, vaccines in your blood, smartphone in your hand, and a flat screen in every room.
Have you checked in with this guy to make sure he's okay?
Oh, he's all over the map. But you know, a lot of this stuff about guns, I think, is really close, you know?
Well, I think there's considerable truth in, yeah, but by the same token, I understand his, you know, controlled response argument, Clarity, but also, it's difficult to get 100,000 people to do the same thing in the same place without some degree of advanced planning.
Well, and those passions, you know, people get overwhelmed with the revolving three-ring circus at the ship of state and Mar-a-Lago mafiosa group. You know, how can we worry about
the extent to which I agree with him is the idea that we've done something if we show up and we march and then we leave. And I've been beating on this for years, that the great protest movements of modernity, of which, you know, there are a few, are the ones where people didn't show up and then leave. The so-called Velvet Revolution, the revolutions that toppled various autocratic or totalitarian dictatorships, the Arab Spring, those are cases of people not showing up and protesting for a few hours and then leaving. Those are cases of people coming and staying because it's life or death. And so what happens in D.C. is show up, chant, leave, and then hope that you can maintain the momentum that you built in the rally and keep people active and keep people engaged. I really do like what Scott was saying. I think it would be far more effective to make that to have that rally surrounding the NRA than out on the National Mall.
Well, that's why they'll give you a permit to have a march, but they won't allow you to have food there, you know, and they know when people get hungry, they're going to leave.
Right, or else they bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in their backpack.
Well, but you know the story of the five wise and five foolish virgins. Not everybody knows to pack a lunch. And they don't eat a good breakfast. In fact, a lot of people are malnourished. You know, that really are affected by, you know, some of this stuff that's going on right now?
It depends on how people are being taught and what they're being taught about. I've been to protests in D.C. that had teachings that went on, trainings that went on beforehand. And it was about things, but it was also concerned with people who were willing to be arrested. Because even during the Obama administration, so-called catch and release is not easy. They don't say tag and you're it. No, it's time consuming. There's a lot of sitting in hot, sweaty buses that usually don't have any AC turned on or whatever. And no access to sanitary facilities, no access to food or drink. And so you have to be prepared for all of those things if you're going to be arrested. Being arrested in Trump America, it's probably a lot more scary a proposition.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in 2003, we had a protest at the Chevron plant in Richmond. And I wish I had pictures of that, and I can't find anything on YouTube or any place there. But there was three layers. There was the feds, the county, city of Richmond, and then the Chevron goons. And there was cameras on everybody that was there, and it was a symbolic thing. There was two people that came up and got arrested. But there was no way we were going to be able to, you know, get past that gauntlet. And it was a half mile from the BART station. So we got a pretty good turnout for it. But it was, you know, when I was there, I was going, this is what we're up against as far as saying, well, this is the reason why we're in Iraq is because of. And, you know, we just wanted to shut down the refinery for symbolic purposes, you know, and we got a lot of attention. But, you know, you just go, if you're up against that and really what the gun thing is about, the NRA, the nationalist mentality, the Nazis, it's all part of the same zeitgeist. And I don't know. I guess today I'm, you know, I'm not a rainbow, but,
You're down here in little ray of sunshine land with me, Clarity.
Exactly, and just goes to show how brave I am, because I usually wait for you to get on the ledge, and then I go, okay. But yeah, it's, you know, my dad educated me, because he did decommissioning stuff between World War II and the Korean War, you know, flying stuff down, right, dumped in the trench. And saw what a huge waste war was, but they didn't want that metal to come back and ruin the American economy after World War II. So, you know, he saw the insanity of it, and then my brother got drafted, and he tried to talk him into going to Canada, because we had family. And my mom says, oh, he's, you know, she was a Nixon fan, and she said, oh, he's got to go fight those commies.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. Yeah, I still have a copy of the letter she got from Nixon, because my brother was in Cambodia when that was going on. And we didn't hear from him for almost 2 months. And then Kent State, you know, was when he was over there. So he's going, what the hell am I doing here? And it's just like, we just don't learn. You know, it's two generations away now, and people have no idea how, you know, disruptive we had to be to stop that goddamn war.
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of we can't learn or if we won't learn. If it's we can't learn, then we really are more screwed. If it's we won't learn, then it's a teachable moment.
Okay, there's the ray of sunshine.
I'm sorry, it's best I got, Clarity.
Well, and as quote-unquote elders now, Bob, it's really up for us to carry a little bit of that pain forward and be able to describe it in a in a way that, you know, it makes our grandkids think twice, you know, before they go off to save Maid Marian.
And, it, you know, right now, look, I mean, there's... I don't sense, and maybe this is what makes it dangerous, I don't sense an imminent war except for the ones that we've already got going on.
Yeah, 28 countries.
It, right. But, look, the guy that he wants for his new Secretary of State, Tillerson thought we would be better off hanging on to the Iran agreement. Mike Pompeo would just as soon scrap it and scramble the jets.
Oh yeah.
And then there's, you know, there's the Koreas, and then, you know, there's the thing that didn't come up in today's discussion because Nazis. The fact that the President of the United States has confessed now that he just tells lies. And he's proud of it.
And brags about it at fundraisers.
Right.
I guess,
and they're not even believable lies. They're entirely transparent, you can't be freaking kidding lies. And I think all of us have known one of these people at one time or another. These people who will just tell lies about mundane bullshit.
Not even because they have to.
They're not even important. And that's what the president is. There was another little story that sort of zipped under the radar that you may or may not have seen. And it's there's a word involved with this that I don't like. And I'm using it because I'm quoting. And it probably seems sort of tacky or whatever. But there's a story came out about how Don Jr. and his soon-to-be ex-wife met. She was, of course, a model. And like, you know, like pappy, like boy. So he's got to go out and find somebody that's hot, really hot, like nine hot. And so they're at, like, the Met Gala or whatever it is. And Trump introduces her to his boy twice within like 5 minutes. Well, some time passes and he and Junior and Vanessa meet again and she says, oh, yeah, I remember you. You're the guy with the retarded dad. Now, this is 2003 or 5 or something. 3, I think. You're the guy with the retarded dad.
They got married in 5.
So yeah, but I mean, so he was introducing them twice, and that is 13 years ago?
Lucky 13.
He's 58?
They have 5 kids.
And his brain power is probably diminishing back then.
Yeah,
it happens.
Family.
So, I mean, that just kind of jumped out at me when I was just like, wow, that's kind of interesting. He's 58 years old and he's repeating himself twice within 5 minutes. I mean,
well, he's probably seeing the writing on his wife that's divorced him. He's probably seeing the writing on the wall. I'm going to have to be around somebody that's this demented.
And she probably knows she's got a hell of a fight on her hands. Because I can't imagine Junior getting custody of those 5 kids. But that means limiting access of the President of the United States to his grandchildren. And that would be deeply humiliating for him. So, you know, I hope she's lawyered up. And I hope they're ready to face all the bullshit that comes with opposing Trump, any Trump, in a legal setting.
War of the Roses.
War for war's sake. But then when you get right down into the courtroom, that's when things get interesting. And quite often, in matters legal with Trumps, they fold like a cheap suit. So at the very least, it will be interesting.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, you're the guy with the retarded dad.
You're the guy. Lights are on, no one's home.
Yep. Bulb or two shy of a chandelier, peanut butter sandwich shy of a picnic.
Oh, I was just going to tell you, today they had full pork loins for $1.89 a pound.
Oh, you know how to hurt a guy.
Yeah, there's a good butcher shop at the Fiesta Foods. They do a pretty good job there. But I don't have a very big freezer, so I basically have to find somebody to split it with me, because they look like they're...
I thought you tried to lead the life sanitary and be all vegan and vegetarian and stuff.
No, I that was when I went through my purity brigade time. I did my master's, and I developed a allergy to soy.
Oh, okay. Well, when you've got a pork loin, this is just a wonderful little trick to do with them, and it makes it so tender and so juicy. Cut it. You know, it's just laying there. So you take a really sharp knife and you cut a pocket in it. Don't butterfly it all the way open.
Okay.
Just cut a pocket in it and stuff it with sliced apples and thinly sliced onions and a few crushed juniper berries.
Okay.
And then, you know, squeeze it back together, roll it up tight in some of that, you know, heavy duty oven proof aluminum foil, stick it in a glass baking dish and put it in the oven on really, really low, you know, like 225 degrees. Unless you've got access to a, you know, smoker.
No, I'll use parchment. I quit using foil to bake with.
No, the whole point, you know, whatever, if it seals it in, that's cool.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
I mean, a really cool way to go about it that's seriously old school is to take some egg whites and mix it with really, really coarse salt. And you encrust the whole thing in the salt.
Okay, yeah.
And bake it inside the salt, and then and it doesn't salt the meat appreciably, but then when all's said and done, you crack the salt away from it, and you've got tender, juicy, wonderful, delicious.
Yeah, I have some kosher salt, and it's pretty coarse.
Yeah, yeah. Anywhere from kosher up to rock salt works. But the trick is to make the
rock
trick.
Salt.
The trick is to make it really sticky with the egg whites.
Yes, I can't do dairy, and so that, you know, everybody thinks I'm a vegan because I turn away just about everything that they serve because it's got some kind of dairy product in it. It was interesting today. They had this it was called a simple bar on special, dollar piece, and their energy bar, and I looked at it. And the damn thing had 47 ingredients in it. Now, how can that be a simple bar?
Well, no, you're simple for purchasing it. That's the whole point there, Clarity.
God, you know, just to eat a handful.
You know, the one that gets all over me lately, I've been cognizant of high fructose corn syrup for a very long time, but palm oil. Really? I can't have an Oreo without freaking palm oil in it? How did we used to make Oreos when we didn't have palm oil?
Well, I use coconut oil. I don't care what they say about saturated fat. My cholesterol is fine, and I know hydrogenation is worse for you than the saturation.
Right, and margarine is a hell of a lot worse than butter.
Oh God, yes.
But the thing with palm oil is the degree to which habitat for
orangutans. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no excuse for anything made in the United States to be made with palm oil except for the fact that it's cheap. And now there's been enough pressure on them. I saw the other day on a label, made with ethically sourced palm oil. Oh, fuck off. Really?
Nah, no such thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Clarity, it's been a lovely evening. I appreciate the conversation.
We went all the way through the, what do you call it, the cycle. From the web to the crest and back again. So I guess that's our version of the world together.
Exactly, exactly. You have a lovely evening.
You too, Bob. Thanks.
Bye now. Our pal Clarity up in the great Northwest. And so that pretty much gets us to about a quarter before the end of the program. And about $200 to fundraise to get us all the way to where we need to be. So that we don't have a big old deficit and just have to raise the ordinary $200 tomorrow. Be nice to wipe out the whole week, but you know, that would be $400. So, yeah, but thank you so much for taking it down as much as you did. I cannot thank you enough. I suspect this is going to be our pal Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
Good. I wanted to just, I know that there's not enough time left, but what is your take on this? I'm glad Connor Lamb won, okay?
Well, me too.
Hell yeah. I'm very glad. And he is not a dino, a Democrat in name only, okay? That's
well, despite the desperate attempt to paint him as such, yes.
Okay. But I am upset about what they're trying to do to Laura Moser in Texas. How do you square that?
I read up on it. I shared some on it a few nights ago. Maybe it was on Friday on the front porch. She is going to be vulnerable to some serious sleazing by the Republicans. She's running in Texas, and she's got blog posts talking about what a shithole it is to have to live in Texas.
It is.
Well, you're going to have a hard time convincing the people you need to vote for you, you know, in Texas, that you really need to be their representative.
Right. I think because, she said because, the little because, town, you know, once, she meant the little town that she lived in.
Well, who cares what she wants? It's what goes into the political ad, Flavio.
You're right. Yeah.
And once the Republican Citizens United money starts flowing, and they start running ads saying, you know, Texas sucks, says Laura Moser. Laura Moser says Texas is a shitty place. Or, you know, they won't use shitty in an ad, but they'll run about every 15 seconds. Okay, and by the time they get done with it, everybody will know that Laura Moser hates Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to be kind of like me running for office in West Virginia, I got an archive of 15 freaking years or something. And call it 14. And there's places in there where I talk about West Virginia not being a very great place to live.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, it would be, you know,
I see your point. I see your point.
And, you know, the blog, the really privileged sort of ethnically tone-deaf thing that she wrote about the Christian orgy she witnessed in a black church in New Orleans or somewhere in Louisiana, that one's out there. And I imagine there are just people who say that, you know, we'd really like to win this election, not just put up somebody to be punched with Republican Citizens United money for 4 months or 3 months, whatever, you know, Labor Day to Election Day, 2 months.
Let's see. I see that. Laura Moser, I did not know she was that vulnerable.
Laura Moser did great work, and she's been a hell of an organizer. I won't take any of that away from her, and I agree with most of her positions. That having been said, we live in a time when the teeniest tiniest thing is enough to get you Willie Hortoned, or to get you Jeremiah Wrighted, or Saul Alinsky'd, because that's how those fuckers roll. Flavio.
Yeah, I'm limited in my thinking because they're playing, you know, three-dimensional chess, and I'm and playing checkers, I guess.
No, I don't think you are. I don't think you are in the least.
I mean, they play really dirty, and I still believe there's justice in the world, but I know there isn't. I know, part of me thinks there's still, but, you know.
Yeah, I do. But you know, we're gonna have those questions all over the place. There's a guy running to be my congressman right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about deeply conflicted? Dude's running as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But in November 2016, he went to the polls and voted for Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah. Are we talking about Ojeda?
Ojeda. It's pronounced Ojeda here. I'm sorry. It's probably, I don't know if he's maybe Portuguese. Is there some Portuguese pronunciation?
No, it's Ojeda is Spanish. Ojeda is Spanish.
Yeah, but what, in Portuguese, is there something else you do with the J besides huh?
Yeah, the J is pronounced like the J in Portuguese.
So it would be Ojeda?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think he's Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
But he voted for Trump.
I know that's
he's all pro Coley and stuff, but he's saying some of the other right things.
And that's yeah.
And today he got slimed by the head of the West Virginia GOP, who accused him of taking government money. You know what government money he takes? He's got a pension because he spent 24 years in the United States military.
Well, yeah, duh. It's the most socialistic institution in the country.
At least I do not get money from the government, Melody Potter said.
Oh, my God.
Because he's got a pension. I guess he was just supposed to stay in the military until he got shot on some godforsaken battlefield somewhere. And then the Melody Potters of the world could wave the bloody shirt and their American flags and point to their little Chinese-made yellow ribbon magnets on the back of their big old SUVs and talk about how they love the troops.
Oh, Jesus.
And that guy is about as far from being ideologically pure enough to meet my standards as one human being can be. I mean, we're not talking about centrist. I mean, that's kind of right-wingy. I mean, now he has disavowed his Trump vote, sure. And he's big on the opioids issue, but he talks shit on Planned Parenthood, and he worries about the precious little fetuses.
One of those, huh?
Oh yeah.
Oh man.
But there's nobody else running who's any better. I don't know. Maybe somebody's running over on the Mountain Party ticket. The Mountain.
Nobody
Party.
That stands a chance.
Right. There's either the Democrats going to win or the Republicans going to win. Period.
And we want the guy with the D at the end.
Well, insofar as we'd like to have a majority, yes.
Yeah, it's not a perfect world.
Nor a perfect system.
No,
I forget who...
I'm coming around to that view more and more because the stakes are so high. You know, and I'm beginning to understand why the DCCC is doing what it's doing. You know.
Well, this is not to say that they're particularly adept or even good at what they do.
Right, it's not. But what else we got to go with?
Yeah.
I mean, this is crunch time.
Right. What do you have?
What else?
You know, the sliming of Randy Bryce is underway up in Wisconsin.
Oh, a pace, yeah.
Yeah. Because by God, it turns out he's not perfect. And nobody is.
And the thing is, I'm beginning to understand, you know, I'm beginning to suspect, too, on the left, that those people on the left doing this are kind of compromised, too, in the sense that they're aiding the enemy.
Oh, and no, everybody's compromised, you know, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, okay?
I'm just saying, I wonder sometimes about those what, you know, what you call the purity trolls. I wonder how many of them are genuinely believe what they do.
Oh, I think there's a good number of them who do. I mean, look, it would be very easy for me to just jump up and run over and join the Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. And just fart sparkles from now till November. In fact, there's an argument to be made that it would be good for keeping this program on the air. But I'm not here as an entertainer. I mean, and when I say I could run over and
you're
do
nobody's,
that...
You're nobody's, or like Jon Stewart said, you're nobody's monkey.
Well, that's true. I mean,
remember when he went on Tucker Carlson's program?
But
I'm not your monkey.
but the problem is that while I expect there are things that I sincerely believe in and want, understanding the danger of the use of the word believe, I also want us to have power first, because we can't do dick without power first.
That's preliminary.
I mean, there's a flow chart here. Get power, do things. Not do things and then get power, because you can't do anything till you got the power.
I mean, I'm coming around to that view more and more, and it's becoming clearer more and more. And I feel kind of dumb that I didn't think that way before. I mean...
I don't think you should beat yourself up by any stretch of the imagination. Just look at it this way. There's a wonderful old movie... with Cary Grant and a teenaged Shirley Temple.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this bit they do.
There's a what they did?
There's a bit that they do.
A bit.
And she says, "You remind me of a man." And he says, "What man?" And she says, "The man with the power." And he says, "What power?" And she says, "The power of hoodoo." And he says, "Hoodoo?" And she says, "You do." And he says, "What?" She says, "Remind me of a man." "What man?" "The man with the power." "What power?" "The power of hoodoo." "Hoodoo? You do. Remind me of a man." But it always comes back around to the man with the power.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that matters is the power. And that's kind of how I think about it.
No, it makes perfect sense.
You don't got power, you don't got shit.
You can't do diddly squat.
Right. Hey, Flavio, I got to get out of here because we're at the top of the hour.
Yeah, you have a great evening.
All right, you
going
too.
Going to Madison this weekend, getting out of Dodge.
Ah, that'll be
for
fun. That'll be fun.
Yes, it will. Take good care.
Hey to everybody in Madison. I will. I do love that place. You take care.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And so it's time to get out of here. We will have a roughly $400 fundraising goal tomorrow evening. On the way out the door, just one last little remark. It is the 15th day of March. Something did happen 2,062 years ago today that changed everything. And I do mean everything. I spend a lot of time thinking about this date. The assassination of Julius Caesar has been used to great effect by people like Shakespeare. George Bernard Shaw. It's been written about ad infinitum. And mostly we know, beware the Ides of March and Et tu, Brute. We don't know if either of those things were actually said. One of the historians reports that when hands were laid upon Caesar, he replied, "This is violence." And the people who were supposed to be taken care of him were locked outside the doors of the Temple of Venus Victrix that was appended to the Theater of Pompey. It's one of my long-standing bucket list things to get up in the morning and walk through and take that walk from what would have been the Domus Publicus, the public house. That's right, Julius Caesar lived in public housing. all the way over to where the temple stood, and the entrance to it's actually underground now, but it it's over near the Torre Argentina in Rome. I like to think about what he was talking about, what he was thinking about. His mind was on his Parthian campaign. He was going to go and whip ass on the Parthians and teach them not to pour molten gold down the throats of any more of his friends ever again. But had he not been assassinated, you don't get a Roman Empire. See, it's one of those lessons in unintended consequences. Brutus minted his own money. Our buddy Horst put that up on his Facebook page, a picture of one of the coins minted by Brutus. And on the back of it, it has two crossed knives and a Liberty hat. They all donned Liberty hats to celebrate their patriotic act of having assassinated Caesar. And then they realized that the people weren't too crazy about it after all. And you got a bunch of people who are babbling about returning to the Republic as if the Republic had somehow been destroyed by Caesar instead of by 100 years of civil fucking war. Who themselves were just more little pissant, petty dictators. And you get the Roman Empire out of it. But the other thing you get out of it is Christianity. Because the Roman boot heel that was dropped on Palestine was brutal indeed. Whereas a lighter touch might have made things entirely different. The assassination of Caesar was not a little stone thrown into a pond. It was a great big boulder thrown into a great big sea. And it didn't make ripples. It made tsunamis. So, when you think about things like the Ides of March, don't take everything for granted. Caesar, among other things, was a member of the populares. He got his power from the people, not from the wealthy senatorial class. That's why they didn't appreciate having their champion murdered. And what the future might have been with him living out his life, however long that would have been, might have made for a very different Rome, and thus a very different now and a very different us. So that's it. Again, thanks to everybody who chipped in to help knock down what was a terrifying fundraising goal. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time on this little planet in our ongoing conversation. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.